being able to share a little bit. I actually have a pretty good history of missions. I've actually done a lot stateside and international. So for myself, I've actually done, Chicago, Milwaukee, all the inner cities there, L.A. I've done two reservations, one in Arizona, one in Washington. And then I've also gone to Nicaragua, and I just came back from Nepal in July. So we're going to hopefully kick off some talk about that. But before we jump into the scriptures, please just join me as we pray. Father God, we just thank you again for a chance to always get together, to celebrate as your family, but most of all, just to connect with you and just to be able to open our hearts to you and continue to be shaped by your love, by your direction, and most of all, Jesus, by your actions, to be able to go out and love all those that you send us to just love with pure hearts and with pure motives and just with the same passion that you did. And so I just pray that today's message just continues to hit all our hearts and just gives us more energy and more passion and most of all more endurance to just keep serving all your people that you want us to go to. And so we just pray all this in your wonderful name, Jesus. Amen. All right. So we're going to look at the book of Acts. This is one of my favorite books. When I did a missions class in school, this is what we read. He's like, we don't need any other textbook besides the book of Acts. It just shows them going to all the different communities. Do you guys have that on the screen? The Acts 4? Okay. And so you guys can read it with me. It says, all the believers were united in heart and mind, and they felt that what they owned was not their own, so they shared everything they had. The apostles testified powerfully to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and God's great blessing was upon them all. There were no needy people among them, because those who owned land or houses would sell them and bring the money to the apostles to give to those in need. Basically, it says, and in among them, there was nobody that had any needs, right? And so in this section, this is kind of like the purest Christian community that we ever see, especially in the New Testament, right? As everybody, this is right after Pentecost, after Jesus' resurrection, after they preached this powerful message where everybody now, 3,000 people are saved. Everybody just instantly had like this one unifying thought, like nothing of ours matters anymore. It all belongs to God, and we should share it with everybody. So there's people that sold their houses, people that sold all these things to be able to meet the people's needs, right? And so in this, some people went excessive. Some people sold everything they had, right? Some people just sold whatever when something came up, right? So it's important to understand the context of this verse that basically when somebody said, I had a problem, they're like, what do we need to do to help them, right? And so it was just like, as soon as the need's there, we're going to come together as a community to help them. And so as we look at this, we just see them loving in the perfect way. And so I have this point that I put up there. And so when most of us know, it says to love God with all our heart, all our mind, all our soul, right? We know that. Jesus kind of taught where he's like, what are the two great commandments? He said, the first one is to love God with all your heart, with all your mind, all your soul. And then the second is to love your neighbor as yourself. And so a lot of times we only focus on just loving God with all our heart, all our mind, all our soul. But in reality, they're kind of parallel. In order to love our neighbors as ourselves, this is what we're supposed to do. Love them with all our heart, all our mind, all our soul. It's the same the way, obviously God's first, but it's the same level of love that we're supposed to give. Right? If you're married, you'd want your spouse to give you these three things, right? And you would want to love your spouse with all your heart, with all your mind, all your soul. If your spouse only gave you one of them, you would not be happy. If you're a parent, you love your kids with those three things as well. Right, you give them all your heart, you give them all your mind, all your soul. That's how your love is to the max. God's first, and you honor God, and you raise your kids to know him, right? You love them with all those three things, but you're also supposed to love people with all those three things as well. And ultimately, the way you love God with all three of those is how it makes it very easy to love everybody else with all three. But you're supposed to have that mindset. I want to love people with all my heart, all my mind, all my soul. The Acts community, that's what it's supposed to be showing. They love God so much, their love to Jesus is so strong that they're now able to love all these people the same way. They're loving with all their hearts, all their minds, all their resources, right, all their soul. They're not worried about holding on to everything for their future. They're giving everything now to these people, right? And so for all of us, hopefully it encourages us to love that same way. And so that's my goal, is to hopefully help start that kind of that desire, right? Am I really loving people with all my mind, all my heart, all my soul? And so for myself, I did do a lot of mission trips. But for me, I basically started missions in war zones. I like that Ruth read Psalm 27 because a lot of it, you know, I experienced it. But most of all, like those are the words that got me through what I went through. But more importantly, what I wanted to do. And so as we look at this, I you know, just a little bit about myself. I was actually supposed to die as a baby. At 6 months, I was sick for a whole year. The doctors didn't know how to save me. They didn't know what was wrong with me. I ended up here at Stanford Hospital at the Children's, right? They have one of the best places there. And they could not figure out the answer, and they just told my parents, he's going to die. Like, just make peace with it. Enjoy the little time that you have with your son. He's just withering away to nothing. There's nothing we could do. And so my dad, in that moment, he prayed to God and had a revelation that basically saved my life, right? God gave him the answer of what was causing my sickness, and basically he was able to make the change, and I still lived, right? So obviously I'm here today. But because I was sick for so long, everybody thought I was going to be very weak because I just basically became like this really skinny baby. And so especially at that time, right, when you're kind of growing, and it's very important for all the nutrients and things like that. So my parents thought I was going to be very weak. And so at about 5 years old, I actually ended up there was like these racist kids at this preschool I went to, and so I ended up beating them all up, right? I won't tell you the full story because I told this in Nepal, and one of my leaders was like, that was the most violent story I've ever heard. He's like, I'll remember that when I'm 80. But it was just like, I just saw something. I saw these kids picking on people, and I just fought, and I just stopped them, right? And so my dad kind of showed me, like, hey, like, at this moment, he's like, what the heck? Like, how does my son have so much strength? And so he had shared with me what happened when I was a baby, and he shared how God had saved my life. And I was shocked. I was like, well, he's like, yeah, this strength is from God. And now you need to use it for him, right? And so that's when I started reading the scriptures. That's when I started reading the Bible. And that's when, you know, I read about Jesus, where it's like, not only did God save my physical life, but Jesus saved my spiritual, my life. And so I'm like, okay, like, I'm dedicated to living my life for God. And I knew he gave me strength to fight for people. And I was like, I'm going to be a soldier for God. That's what I'm going to do. And so in high school, 9/11 happened. My sister was actually in New York at the time. My parents were there like 2 weeks earlier dropping her off. She went to St. John's. And so they were touring New York and everything. And so obviously it hit home a lot, where it's like, man, they just missed it. But at the time, I just saw serving the country, joining the army was my best chance to kind of serve God, right? It was evil people, but people want to do stuff. But I wanted to go and actually fight for God and fight for good, right? So so for me, that was my first mission field. And so I ended up going to Iraq. And so I went basically in 2005. And so the place I went, it was called Ramadi, Iraq. It was the most dangerous city of the most dangerous year of all the wars that the U.S. in the Iraq and Afghanistan. So the death totals were really high in that one place in that 1 year, right? So it was definitely war. And so while I was there, I had this same mindset, right? Like, I'm serving God. I'm here to do whatever he asked me to do. I need to do what I love people and love my soldiers and love all the people in these communities. Because a lot of people there were also, there was like a big genocide there. They were like a different type of Muslim. I don't know if you guys know anything about their culture, but they have like Shiites and Sunnis, where they're like, if you're the wrong type of Muslim, they kill you. And so I was in the area where the people that were all massacred for being the wrong type of religion, right? The wrong type of Muslim. So we were also building stuff to help them, building, like, improving their water, like housing, things like that. You know, so it was a lot of good work. I was like, man, I could really do a lot for God here. And so, but there was obviously a lot of challenges, a lot of dangers. And so I remember one day, you know, they were bombing us really heavy, right? They have like these mortars and stuff, rockets, where they just shoot in the air and they just launch down like fireworks on everybody. And so it was very dangerous just to get to work, right? So usually you had about like 10 to 15 minutes walk. So you had to like wear body armor just to walk to work, right? So even, you know, most of the time you wear body armor when you're outside the gates and outside the wire, like outside the base, right? That's when the enemy can attack you. But for us, it was so dangerous, we had to wear it all the time, 24/7. We had to sleep in it as well. And so everybody would just try to walk and rush to work right away. Right, so the goal was to get into like really solid buildings, right? So that way you can't get hurt. And so as I was walking one day, you know, I'm going, and about halfway there, I see this guy's vehicle is broken down. And so he's sitting there, he's stressing out. I knew he was like a very young soldier, he was new, and so he was panicking, right? He's like, I know, like, as soon as they see me like just stranded in the middle of nowhere, they're gonna try to lob in all these mortars at him and try to blow him up, right? So he's like, man, I'm in harm's way. And so I see him, I know who he is, I know he's a good guy, and I was like, hey, man, like, do you need some help? And he's like, I was like, what happened with the vehicle? He's like, I don't know, like, I can't fix it. And I was like, well, I'm pretty good. I know how to fix these vehicles. I've got a lot of training. I was like, maybe I can help you. And he's like, no, don't worry about it. Like, just get to safety, right? Like, don't risk your life trying to just help me here. And I was like, man, like, don't worry about that. Like, I still have to walk a long way anyways, right? So I could get blown up walking. I was like, if I help you fix your vehicle, then we can get to the safety faster, right? So it makes sense just to help you. And so I end up working with him. We get his vehicle fixed very quickly. And then we're off and we get to our main building. And so when we get to this main building, he asked me, like, why'd you stop? And I was like, well, honestly, I'm a Christian. I was like, I see that when somebody's in help, you're supposed to do something, right? When you read the parable of the Good Samaritan, where everybody just walks by the guy, right? And I was like, you're supposed to actually stop and help him and take him and make sure he gets to safety. And so I was like, yeah, my faith, it says I should do this for you. And he's like, you weren't worried about dying? I was like, but that's the point, right? Like, you're supposed to be willing to risk your life for others. So I was like, if I leave you there and you die, like, I'm going to have to live with that guilt for a long time. I'd rather help you and do what's right and honor God with that. And so he was kind of shocked. He's like, what? And he's like, your faith made you do that. I was like, yeah, my faith. And he's like, I've never seen you come to church, right? And so on the basis, there's little churches. That we have, like, chaplains and stuff. Sometimes they go to us in remote locations. He's like, how come I never seen you at church? And I was like, well, like, my schedule doesn't allow it. I had a very different schedule than most. And so I was like, I work on the Sundays to prepare the plans and construction stuff for people that start on Monday. So I was like, you guys get the weekend off. You go to church, and then we have everything ready for you on Monday. And then I get to, you know, do my own stuff on my own. And so he was like, okay, that makes sense. He's like, but you know what's crazy? He's like, five of the people I go to church with, they just walk right by me. He's like, none of them were willing. They were like, we're going to pray for you. We're going to pray for you. Like, we're going to make, you know, we hope God takes care of you, but we're getting to safety. And so he's like, why were you willing to actually risk your life? And they weren't. And I was like, well, I don't know why, you know, I don't know why they did what they did, but I was like, I just know that God saved my life as a baby. Like, I know my life is his. Every day he's given me was a gift, so I use it every day for him. That's all I know, and that's all I do. And it's like, I have nothing to fear because of how he saved me before. And so he's like, man, like, that's pretty crazy. He's like, I want to hear more stories. And so I'm like, well, like, you know, I always read my Bible every night. Just come by and we'll do Bible studies, right? And just we'll just talk about faith, talk about things, and just be able to encourage each other. And so he's like, all right, let's go, right? And so right away, we came every night, and then he started inviting friends. And so we just had, like, a good group. We just created, like, this small group of people studying the Bible at night, just talking about God in this tough time. And so in that, I seen God, like, okay, God made me for a purpose. God used my history. But more importantly, like, I get why you're supposed to love with all three of these things, right? Like, it opens up, like, the opportunity to really minister to people, to really share more of Jesus. Because how strong he was in my life, I get why these people were scared. But that's where it was like, Jesus is the only one that can take that fear away. Jesus is the only one that's going to give us that strength. But more importantly, it was going to make us be a stronger community. If every one of us are looking out for each other, if every one of us are willing to help, we can actually get out of harm's way faster or have a stronger group going up against what we're going against. And so I had that kind of like mindset, like, okay, now I see God giving me these doors to use my faith and use my courage for him. And so I'm going to do more and more. Any chance I get, God, I'm gonna do whatever you ask. And so so God obviously answered that prayer and gave me another chance to risk my life. And so at this time, I was a construction guy, right? I designed all the buildings, the air bases, the roads for the Army, and all the different branches. And so we had to travel a lot. We had to escort, like, big equipment and stuff like that. And so all our stuff were, like, really heavily up armored. And, you know, we have all these armored, like, bulldozers and things like that. And so as we would go, we transport people, transport all these things. And so I ended up being on the job where it was my job to escort all these stuff. Right, so now I'm on this team where we drive everything. And so one day they're like, man, it's really dangerous out there. In this location, I told you, it was the most dangerous spot in Iraq. They actually blown up like 20 of these, we call them M1 Abrams tanks. These are like the top level armored tanks that the Army has. And the people we were going up against blew up 20 of them. Right, so they knew they were really smart. They knew how to the battle. They were taking out our best equipment. And so the Army was like, okay, like, you know, these people are tearing us up, but we got to do these jobs. And so they ended up, like, doubling up our armor, right? So they're like, we had these Humvees, the little, like, if you know what Humvee is, it's like those little Jeep-type things. And so they already had armor on them, and they're like, we need to double it just to be able to keep them alive. And so now the vehicles were really heavy. The engines were struggling because it was just so much, like, weight on it. And so as we were having to escort these groups of people to this one little remote spot, halfway, as we're getting there, about halfway, there was like a sniper that shot one of the tires. And so the guy's tire ends up going flat. So when we get to this compound, we drop the people off. And so normally, you know, like your cars, you have little jacks and stuff like that, right? You can change your tire. Problem is, the jacks were originally designed for the original weight of that vehicle, not the double levels of armor. So it's like the jacks weren't strong enough to actually lift it up to change the tire, right? So we're like, man, we're stuck. We can't change the tire with the equipment we have. It's going to break it. And so the guy that was driving the vehicle that his tire got shot, he's like, man, like, what are we going to do? We need to drive back. You know, we need to get back home. Otherwise, we're going to get attacked in this little compound. And so at the time, these tires have what's called run flats, where inside of it is like this huge, thick rubber tube surrounding the rim, right? And so it's meant to be like, in case you get a puncture, you can still drive another 30 miles without having to stop, right? These are vehicles that were designed for combat. Everything was thought of. But these little rubber things were made for the original weight. So you could get 30 miles at 35 miles an hour on the original weight. And so the driver was like, there's no way we can drive on that little run flat and make it back home. It's just going to start sparking. It's probably going to catch on fire and the vehicle's going to blow up. And if you know anything about military vehicles, they leak fluids all over the place. There's this saying where it's like, if your vehicle's not leaking, then you're really in bad shape because that means it ran out of fluids. Right, because we're driving over rough terrain, all this other stuff, so everything's always getting dented and scratched. So you always have to carry extra fluids to like fill in that. But that's where it was like they're always leaking stuff, and so that's where it's like if you drive on that flat tire and it starts sparking, once it hits the rim, it can ignite all those things. And so the guy was like, I don't want to drive it. I don't want to blow up. I don't want to die. Right. And so as we're all sitting there thinking like, what do we do? I was like, I'll drive it. And they're like, what? I was like, I guarantee, like, I could get it back home. Like, I can, because it's hard to drive with a flat tire, too, that fast. And I was like, I think I can control it. I can be able to, you know, stay with you guys, stay up at 35, and we can get through the area that they're going to try to attack us. Because basically, when the guy shot the tire, that's his goal. I want them to slow down and have to come back in this area so now we can ambush them. Does that make sense? So they know we got to get back because they know where our main base is at. And so it was like, we're going to have to go, and we need to get back there, ambush. And so I'm like, I'm willing to drive that. And so everybody's like, what? And I was like, yeah. Like, you know, I've done a couple things already where, like, God has saved me from, like, some of these different roadside bombs and things like that. And I was like, man, I know God's with me. And at the same time, who better to risk his life? And that's where I share. Like, if I got Jesus, if I got eternal life, and this guy's not saved, who should be the one that's sitting in the driver's seat? Does that make sense? Because that's where I was like, hey, if you die, you go to hell. If I die, I go to heaven. At least you now have a chance to get witnessed to later, right? Like, you now have my life over your head. But that's where, and so they're like, okay, like, we're going to let you drive. And they're like, you sure? And I was like, yeah. And so as I get in this vehicle, I'm like, just go 35 miles an hour. I'll keep up. And so as we start going, about a quarter of the way, like, I could tell, like, that tire is almost gone. Like, it's just running away. And so now on the radios, they're like, we can see sparks coming from your back. And so at first it was just like a couple little sparks, right? Like, you could tell, like, as I swerved, sometimes the rim would hit. And so as we're coming up, we know where they're going to ambush us at. And we're sitting there like, oh, man, like, here comes the ambush spot. Like, what are we going to do? At this point, now the whole thing is sparking, right? Because they're like, do we slow down? You're starting to spark. It's like, just keep going, 35. And so at this point now, the whole back is just sparking all over the place. Like, it's just sparks coming all the back of the truck. And so as we're driving through this, man, we're like, oh, man. I'm like, don't worry. Like, we got this. And I'm just on the radio, like, go. And so as we get through this ambush spot, they're like, what the heck? How come nothing happened? Right? The enemy didn't attack. And I was like, and they're like, Joaquin, what do you think happened? I was like, you know what I think happened? I was like, as they were sitting there looking in their little scopes, right? They're like, all right, we're going to blow these guys up when they get to this spot. And they just see my vehicle shooting sparks everywhere. And they're like, oh, my goodness, like, who is doing this? Like, who would drive like that? And they're like, I bet you he's going to blow up any second now. And then they start taking bets. Like, I bet you he's going to blow up in 5 seconds, 10 seconds, right? And so rather than shooting me and blowing me up, they were having fun. They're like, we can blow up somebody later. We got to see what happens with this guy driving, right? So I just flew by, right? It was just sparks flying everywhere. And so, but nothing happened to us, right? I was able to get back. And so as we got back to the base, I pulled over as soon as we got in. And everybody's like, I got to see this guy's tire. We got to see what happened. And so as we look, you know, you ever seen those guys with the mohawks where it's like the little tiny line of hair in the middle? Have you seen a mohawk? So in this tire, the rim, all that was left was like little tiny rubber spikes in the center, right? Everything else was completely gone. Like the metal was just all, you know, ground up, everything. And they're like, Joaquin, like, how did you do this? And that's what I shared. I was like, that's my faith, man. God's got me. And so as we did our Bible study that night, everybody's like, wow, man, did you really do this? Like, weren't you scared of getting blown up or catching fire, all this stuff? And I was like, man, didn't y'all ever read, like, Daniel's friends, right? Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, when they're in the fire and they're like, God's got us. Even if he don't, we going with him. But we're not doing what God wants us to do. And I was like, afterwards, I was like, that's how I felt. Like, I was dancing. And I saw that time. I was like, God, right? Like, I don't dance very much. But I danced after that, right? When I seen God, what God did for me. How he saved me, I was like, man, like, this is what it was about, right? I'm loving people with all my heart, with all my mind, all my soul. And it's like, no fear, no situation is going to make me do otherwise. And so as I was there, like, eventually, like, we were wrapping up our last projects, right? We got to finish these projects before we go home. And so we were trying to, at this time, we're just getting bombed left and right. Like, this is, like, the worst 30 days of the actual campaign. And so they're just shooting rockets, mortars nonstop. We're trying to build up certain things to be able to protect ourselves and then be able to kind of take back the town. And so I had these guys that were doing this construction project on the outside wall. And so when you do the wall projects, it's very dangerous because you open up, you know, like a spot of your wall where now the enemy can come in. So they try to attack you left and right. And so as I was working with the guy that was in charge of the actual construction part of it, like he was the guy running the equipment and the people, you know, he was like, man, like, I don't have as much support. I don't have the people needed to be able to get this project done in time and to keep them all safe. And so I shared with him, like, well, I have all these other things the military has me doing. I can't help you during the daytime. Right, like I have other missions that they say are more priority. I can't ignore orders. And so he's like, what can we do? And so part of why I have this give all your heart, give all your mind. The training I received, I talked with a lot of people. I was always talking about my job, how to get better, how to get sharper, how to lead my people, how to lead people better, right? How to get them out of harm's way faster. And so I remember somebody had shared this technique of like old school ways of doing some of this, like surveying maps, laying out roads and stuff. And I was like, I have the old equipment. I could give this guy equipment, but he doesn't know how to use it. And so I told him, hey, if you were willing to come at night, I could teach you some of this equipment and you could check yourself. And that would get you like 90% accurate. And then when we do get to come back out, we can finish it. And I was like, but it's like that's going to have you coming back after like 12, 14-hour shifts in like body armor in 130-degree weather, right? And so I was like, I don't think you're going to be able to do it. I don't know if you really want to be able to, like, are you going to have any energy left to come train? And he's like, nah, like, I got to. Right, and so he was a Christian too. He's like, yeah, like my job as their leader is to bring them home. Like I gotta give everything. He's like, if I have to come after a long day to be able to like learn this stuff, I'll do it. And I was inspired by his commitment and passion. I was like, all right, like if you're willing after you have a harder day than I do to come learn, then I'll teach you. Right, and so we would stay at night. I would teach him some techniques for a couple of days, and so that now he was ready to do it and lead his team and get faster. And so as he was doing it, they were getting really fast. They were building this thing up that they were supposed to build. And then all of a sudden, he was like, I'm running out of, like, he's like, I still need you to make a couple major checks, like, in the middle of the day. And he's like, that would really help us. And so I talked to my leadership. They're like, it's possible if you could sneak away for maybe an hour. But they're like, you know when you leave, like, you're going to be, like, a target, right? Like, the enemy's going to try to shoot you and blow you up because they're going to see you going to this important project that they're trying to get to. And I was like, it don't matter. Like, if I'll risk my life to go out and help these guys. And so the very first day, like, I tried to go out there, I helped them, and it's like, okay, like, I was able to go and give them some information and come back without any harm. The problem is the enemy can see you and watches you and sees where you come from, where you go, when you come back, right? Like, they study everything about you. And so I'm like, okay, like, if I go back and the next day, like, it's possible that now they're going to try to get me. And so the next day, I do the same thing. I try to load my truck up with my equipment and try to go see them. So as soon as I load up my truck, I just hear this boom, boom, and I just see this rocket coming right at me. And so they say, you know, in the movies, how time slows down when you're about to die. It's true, right? Like, if my hair stood up, I could just see, I was just like, oh, man, here comes a rocket coming at me. And so based on the speed of how they travel, it was probably 1.5 seconds in real life, but it felt like a good 10 seconds. I'm just like, oh, that rocket's coming right at me. Like, it looks like it's a good height. It looks like it's about to get me. And so in that moment, I was just like, okay, God, like, is this it? Is this the moment? Because it looks like they got me. And so as I'm watching this rocket, it's coming. I'm like, okay, it looks like it's coming straight for me. And then all of a sudden, it went right above my head and exploded. And so when it exploded, it just shot out all this metal, and it took out this other side, this other wall that was on the other side, and it killed 5 people, right? So they killed these people that were in, like, in the restrooms and stuff. And so it was, like, 5 medics, right? So they killed these 5 guys, and it was like, oh, man, like, it was crazy. It was, like, so close, but it was like, right there in front of me. And so I was like, oh, man. So they get aid for those, you know, they try to save those guys, but my job, I went out to the project site. So I went, and then I came back, and I was like, man, like, that was such a close call. And so the way rockets work is like the first day is always their most inaccurate because they're trying to gauge and they're trying to measure. They're trying to guess everything, right? The second day or third day, that's when they're more accurate. They're more deadly. And then you get to see who they were really aiming at. So the third day, I'm like, okay, this is my last day. I got to go out there. I know I need to go out there and risk my life to go be there for them. This is what God would want me to do. So I load up my truck again. And so as soon as I get all my stuff loaded, here it is again. Boom. Hear that boom coming. I see this rocket. And I was like, that rocket's a little lower this time. Right, I was like, now they got it perfectly corrected. It's coming right for me. It's right there. And I'm like, now is my time. And so in this moment, I'm like, do I run to the left? Do I run to the right? All this, I was like, you know, but you can't really outrun a rocket. And so sometimes you might run right into the shrapnel that it shoots out. Because the way these things would work, they're like, if they're going to try to shoot that wall, they would shoot it like a half, like right through 3/4, and then it explodes out, and it just shoots shrapnel to destroy the whole wall. Right, so it has like these special timers inside of it to explode at the right time. And so as I'm watching this rocket, I was like, now they got the right aim. I was like, I don't think I can run it either way. And that's where, like, the psalm that they read earlier was like, you just have to stand in confidence. And so I stood there and I'm like, this is not, I was like, God, if this is your time, then at least I did what you wanted me to do. At least I was doing the work that you asked me to do, to try to love them and save them. And so as soon as this rocket came to the right destination, I saw the little circle inside of it spin, like the ignition is trying to hit the second explosion. And then it was a dud. It just hit the ground right in front of me. So it didn't explode, right? It didn't fully explode the right way. So as I'm looking at it, there were some guys off on the side. And they were like, oh, they're like, what just happened? I was like, ah, right? I was like, that, ah! Like, right? It was like God's protection, right? It was like, I did what he asked me to. I was trying to risk it. And it was like, man, nothing touched me. Nothing happened to me. And so as afterwards, you know, this guy was a Christian, right? When we said our goodbyes, we just celebrated like, man, like God is good. Right, he gave us the strength, he gave us the passion, but he just filled us with this love that just allowed us to love others better. Right, we were just given all our mind, given all our soul, given all everything. And so for myself, you know, a lot of people are like, man, why were you willing to do this? Why were you? And it was like, number one, that's what Jesus did for me. Every time I would face these situations, I would just think, like, what would he do? What would he want from me? What does he expect? And it's like, whatever gift he's given me, whatever strength he's given me, it should be in service of him, and it should be in service of loving others. And so it just always gave me the courage. I would always think about, like, hey, I owe everything to him. Why would I hold anything back from him? And he doesn't want I can't really love him back, right? But the only way he says I can love him back is to love all those that he cares about. And I was like, then that's what I'll do. And so for yourselves, you know, hopefully, you know, you get to see that. I don't have enough time because I have way more stories. But in reality, right, like in the mission trips, this is what we would do. We would give everything we have. From my Nepal trip, we raised a bunch of funds, we cooked, we did everything that we could do. It was just like whatever we can to help. I've met friends here in the Bay Area that at a Korean church, some of their members were like they were like the owners of a cell phone company, and they're like, we give a lot of money, but we're not like able to like give more to God's community. And so they ended up talking with missionaries, and they were able to come up with they created a cell phone that could hide Bibles. And so it was like, you know, these countries that you're not allowed to have a Bible. So they use their minds to be able to serve God and design these cell phones, and they use their resources to help fund the production of it, to be able to give it to missionaries to take on the mission field. Right? Like, there's all these ways that you can use whatever God has given you to love others. But it's that commitment. Will you give all your heart, all your mind, all your soul? And so through that, I think most people are always like, I'm afraid of losing this, I'm afraid of losing that. What if I don't have this no more? But the one thing that I learned in all those experiences, all those stories, and all the mission trips I've been on is that, yes, you give up something from this earth, but then at the same time, you're getting way more from God in other ways that you never thought possible. The bonds that we built, the families, like the closeness that we have, it was something special. The ability to actually see God more was something special, where I'm like, wow, the scriptures come alive way more. The scriptures, if they're all true about in the worst situation, in the way he protects me and all these things, then the rest of the scriptures and every advice, every wisdom, everything that it talks about, it's just you believe it like that. It gives you more confidence to believe in everything that you read because you went after what he said. He's like, if you give all these things, I got your back. Or if you give all these things, you won't ever have need. I'll supply what you need, not what you want. And so it just increases your spiritual life more and more and more, which then allows you to give even more and more and more. And so for yourselves, I know, you know, whatever you come up with, it's going to be tough, right? You have a lot to do. You have a lot to provide for here. But at the end of the day, God's like, this is not your full life. This is not your destination, right? This is just a temporary thing to develop you and develop your faith, develop who you need to be to live your life for now and for eternity. And so that's where, like, those situations, that's why I was like, this will prepare me for eternity. I trusted God with it, and I'm going to go after it. I'll end with this real quick, because even, like, for youth, right, no matter what age you are, you can be able to just try to do this. Give all your heart, all your mind, all your soul. When we were going to Nepal, you know, it was a very big thing. Our church was a little like hesitant to get on behind it because it was just not done yet. And we hadn't done a mission trip since COVID. And so one of the youth, his dad let him get all the information and try to get there for 2 months. But at the very last day, the last deadline to sign up, his dad's like, you can't go. You got to study for SATs. You know, he was a junior. And he was like, you got to worry about your future. This is not going to help you. And so he gave me the news, like my dad said, like, I can't go. And I felt kind of bad because I really liked, he's a good guy, and I thought the mission trip would help him, and he was very serious about his faith. And I was like, man, this would have been so good for your faith. I can't tell you to disobey your dad, because that's not what the Bible says. But I was like, but I think you could try to talk to your dad again and say, hey, like, what if I guarantee you, like, I'll study for my SAT when I get back. Like, I'll take it really seriously. I'll study harder after this mission trip, right? But I want to serve God first and then have that fuel my life. And so he convinced his dad, like he was able to do it in a respectful way, which I was very impressed. And his dad let him go. And so he did the mission trip. He was really committed throughout the year, and he had a blast, and he really connected. He was all emotional on the trip. Like, it just hit his heart really well, right? God just did so much in his life. And so he just came back. He did his SAT, and he got, like, really high in the 1500s. And so, you know, he was like, hey, Dad, look what I did, right? His dad didn't even believe him. His dad's like, I don't think you got that real score. Show me on the official website, right? But the kid was like, yeah, see, like, that's why I said, like, you prioritize God first, give all your things, and then, it just gives you better perspective. He understood, like, what he has, the privileges, and it just made him want to work harder. But it also made him want to work harder for his future to be able to help people more in the future. So after he finished scoring high, he's like, you know what I want to do? I want to just tutor people to help them. I'm going to help them tutor to get higher scores for free, right? I feel like God helped me, blessed me, protected me, and I'm just going to give them all a little bit back. And I was like, man, what a great way to just see, like, from a young age, he just sees that that's the principle. You give it all to God, give it all to what he asked you of, and then he just keeps supplying and supplying and supplying. And so that's my encouragement for you for this month. As you keep getting missions, people speaking, have that heart where, like, how can I give all my heart, all my mind, all my soul? What do I have? What has God put inside me that I know he wants to use? It's just now me, the only one holding it back. And so I'll end like that. I'll invite Pastor Ben back up here to finish communion. But thank you guys for the time and the ability just to share some stories with you.